grave. There is, however, a sad significance in his words when he says, "In every circle I have met men who had themselves suffered from nervous collapse due to stress of business or named friends who had either killed themselves by overwork or had been permanently incapacitated or had wasted long periods in endeavors to recover health." Too true. And it is the constant strain without let-up or relaxation that in 9 cases out of 10 snaps the cord and ends in what the doctors call nervous prostration, something akin to paralysis from which the sufferer seldom wholly recovers. Mr. Spencer quotes the quaint old chronicler Froissart as saying, "The English take their pleasures sadly after their fashion," and thinks if he lived now he would say of Americans, "They take their pleasures hurriedly after their fashion." Perhaps. It is an age of hurry and worry. Anything slower than steam is apt to get left. Fortunes are quickly made and freely spent. Nearly all busy, hard-working Americans have an intuitive sense of the need that exists for at least one period of rest and relaxation during each year, and all or nearly all are willing to pay liberally, too liberally, in fact, for anything that conduces to rest, recreation, and sport. I am sorry to say that we mostly get swindled. As an average, the summer outer who goes to the forest, lake, or stream for health and sport gets about 10 cents worth for a dollar of outlay. A majority will admit, to themselves at least, that after a month's vacation they return to work with an inward consciousness of being somewhat disappointed and beaten. We are free with our money when we have it. We are known throughout the civilized world for our lavishness in paying for our pleasures, but it humiliates us to know that we have been beaten. And this is what most of us know at the end of a summer vacation. To the man of millions, it makes little difference. He is able to pay liberally for boats, buckboards, and body service if he chooses to spend a summer in the North Woods. He has no need to study the questions of lightness and economy in a forest and stream outing. Let his guides take care of him, and unto them and the landlords he will give freely of his substance. I do not write for him and can do him little good. But there are hundreds of thousands of practical, useful men, many of them far from being rich, mechanics, artists, writers, merchants, clerks, businessmen, workers, so to speak, who sorely need and well deserve a season of rest and relaxation at least once a year. To these and for these I write. Perhaps more than 50 years of devotion to woodcraft may enable me to give a few useful hints and suggestions to those whose dreams during the closed season of work, are of camp life by flood, field, and forest. I have found that nearly all who have a real love of nature and out-of-door camp life spend a good deal of time and talk in planning future trips or discussing the trips and pleasures gone by, but still dear to memory. When the mountain streams are frozen and the norland winds are out, when the winter winds are drifting the bitter sleet and snow, when winter rains are making out-of-door life unendurable, when season, weather, and law combine to make it close time for beast, bird, and man, it is well that a few congenial spirits should, at some favored trysting place, gather around the glowing stove and exchange yarns, opinions, and experiences. Perhaps no two will exactly agree on the best ground for an outing or half a dozen other points that may be discussed. But one thing all admit. Each and every one has gone to his chosen ground with too much impedimenta, too much duffel, and nearly all have used boats at least twice as heavy as they need to have been. The temptation to buy this or that bit of indispensable camp kit has been too strong, and we have gone to the blessed woods, handicapped with a load fit for a pack mule. This is not how to do it. Go light, the lighter the better, so that you have the simplest material for health, comfort, and enjoyment. Of course, if you intend to have a permanent camp and can reach it by boat or wagon, lightness is not so important, though even in that case it is well to guard against taking a lot of stuff that is likely to prove of more weight than worth, only to leave it behind when you come out. As to clothing for the woods, a good deal of nonsense has been written about strong, coarse woolen clothes. You do not want coarse woolen clothes. Fine woolen cashmere of medium thickness for coat, vest, and pantaloons, with no cotton lining. Color, slate gray or dead leaf, either is good. 2 soft, thick woolen shirts, 2 pairs of fine but substantial woolen drawers, 2 pairs of strong woolen socks or